Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening today. As always, go to reallifepharmacology.com, subscribe there and get your free top 200 study guide. Great little resource for those of you taking pharmacology classes, and or if you've been out for a while and just want a little refresher and to make sure you're up to speed in your clinical practice. So again, 31-page PDF, absolutely yours for free. Share it with friends, whatever you want to do with it, study guide, that type of thing. Go take advantage of that. Sign up at reallifepharmacology.com, and we'll also get you updates when we've got a new podcast available, as well as other information as well. So thank you all for doing that. And today I want to get into the drug of the day, and that is torsemide. Brand name of this medication is Demodex, and it is a loop diuretic. So if you remember from the furosemide episode, mechanistically, this drug and this class of drugs is going to inhibit sodium and chloride reabsorption in the ascending loop of Henle. So again, we're talking about in the kidney there, and that's where the name comes from, the loop of Henle and loop diuretics. So by inhibiting that reabsorption back into the body of some of those electrolytes and things, what's going to happen is water's going to go with it. And so ultimately what happens is we end up losing electrolytes as well as water out into the bladder and ultimately obviously out through the urine. So that can cause patients to go to the bathroom more. And that's one of the primary complaints of diuretics, at least from a patient perspective in my experience there. So uses, heart failure, and cirrhosis, basically disease states that might cause or contribute to edema or fluid overload. So those are the primary uses that you're going to see a drug like torsemide used in. It can be used for hypertension, but we've got a lot of other drugs that we're typically going to go to first before we turn to a loop diuretic specifically for lowering blood pressure. So understanding those indications and what a loop diuretic is used for, as a pharmacist, I'm always on the lookout for drugs that are going to worsen some of those disease states that we might add torsemide to. So, for instance, a drug like pregabalin can cause some edema, some swelling as an adverse effect. So you want to make sure that we're not contributing to polypharmacy in the prescribing cascade. So if a patient gets started on pregabalin for maybe some neuropathic pain, and then you notice 2 weeks, 4 weeks later, you see a prescription for a loop diuretic like torsemide. You've got to recognize that that's part of the prescribing cascade, and we're managing new adverse effects with the addition of a new medication, and that can perpetuate itself and lead to polypharmacy big time. So I talk a ton about examples like this in my new book, Perils of Polypharmacy, which you can certainly find on Amazon there. But pregabalin's one example of a drug that can cause edema and potentially precipitate a prescription for a loop diuretic like torsemide. Calcium channel blockers, keep an eye on those. So a drug like amlodipine, gabapentin along with pregabalin maybe, pioglitazone, a diabetes medication, not used terribly often, but another one that can cause some edema and swelling there. So keep tabs on that, and it can really help you prevent polypharmacy in the prescribing cascade in your patients for sure. Dosing, usual initial dosing for torsemide is in the ballpark of 5 to 20 milligrams. Can depend upon what we're doing. If it's just some mild swelling and edema that's really, kind of a nuisance to the patient and really maybe not clinically significant or too clinically significant, we'll probably shoot for a lower dose, 5 or 10 milligrams. As we get into more, serious cases of heart failure and things like that, initially we might do 20 milligrams and kind of titrate up. So definitely can vary a little bit based upon the starting dose. based upon what we're trying to do, and of course, the risk for adverse effects. So if patients had a history of dehydration and renal failure in the past, you know, we might be a little bit more cautious and conservative on the dosing, again, weighing that with the risk of swelling and fluid retention. One thing that does come up occasionally in clinical practice is conversion between loop diuretics. So, you know, in a patient that maybe isn't responding to furosemide or something, we may look to switch them to a different loop diuretic, and torsemide certainly could fit the bill there. So typically, approximate conversion is 20 milligrams of torsemide to 40 milligrams of oral furosemide. Now, there are some circumstances where this can vary a little bit. And of course, we want to keep the clinical picture in mind as well. So, you know, if you've got a patient that's, you know, on furosemide 40 milligrams and you want to convert them to torsemide, but they were on, you know, more on the side of dehydration or overdiuresis, or maybe, you know, severe electrolyte deficiencies, low potassium, then we're probably going to want to be, you know, on the lower end of that conversion, and we may be more and more conservative in that situation. So whenever you have a conversion, whether it's opioids or loop diuretics in this case, really pay attention to the patient clinically. And you know, it might not be a, you know, exact conversion like the book says. You may want to be more cautious. You may want to be more aggressive in certain situations. So it's really, really important to kind of think about that patient, clinically there. And just to kind of finish that off, bumetanide or Bumex is the other common loop diuretic. Torsemide 20 is approximately, equivalent to, bumetanide 1 milligram. Adverse effects. So I've alluded to a couple already. So urinary frequency, remember, we're going to push water to the bladder and ultimately out of the body. Well, that's going to lead to patients having to pee a lot more. Dehydration, so as we run off more fluid, that is a risk, certainly. The more and more aggressive you get with running fluid off and potentially managing symptoms of heart failure and swelling and edema, the more aggressive you get, the more likely that we're going to cause fluid loss in the vessels and, of course, the kidney as well, and that can lead to acute renal failure risk. And certainly I'll talk about medications in the drug interaction section that may kind of exacerbate that risk. Electrolyte imbalances, you got to anticipate that that is a significant possibility. That's why we monitor kidney function as well as electrolytes. And most electrolytes with loop diuretics are going to be depleted. So of note, probably the three most prominent ones that cause issues, potassium is usually top of the line that we worry about first. Sodium you may see some issues with, and magnesium you may see some issues with as well. So those are definitely three electrolytes to pay attention to. Can cause some other issues too, but those are the three that I see most often with issues there. Rarely can cause ototoxicity. Probably more likely to see it, you know, at higher doses in a hospitalized patient, and maybe they're on other ototoxic medications as well. So aminoglycosides being kind of the classic example there, you know, your gentamicin, tobramycin. And of course, in addition to the renal function, electrolyte monitoring parameters, blood pressures are going to be monitored as well. Obviously, as you run off fluid, that can lower blood pressure and potentially cause some dizziness and things along those lines. Kinetics of note, oral absorption may be a little bit more consistent than furosemide. So I would say in my experience, most clinicians use furosemide first. They're generally most comfortable with it. They've seen it used most often. But in a patient that maybe isn't responding to furosemide, that might be a situation where somebody might try one of the other loop diuretics like torsemide. And one of the potential advantages is there may be a little less variability between patients in the amount absorbed or the percentage absorbed of that torsemide. It does have a slightly longer half-life than furosemide as well. Clinically, does that make a huge difference? Probably not. But in the setting where, you know, maybe we want a longer half-life or something for some reason, torsemide does have a little bit longer half-life than furosemide potentially. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, NAPLEX, ambulatory care, geriatrics, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. We've got a growing list of great resources. We've been at this for several years, creating content to really help you prepare and pass your board exam. So again, definitely go check that out, meded101.com/store. If you're a nurse, med student, PA, nurse practitioner, my new book, Perils of Polypharmacy, great book if you're involved in geriatrics and you see a lot of patients on a lot of medications. I think you're going to pick up a lot of pearls, or at least re-remember some important nuggets that may help you minimize your patients from going down the road of polypharmacy and the prescribing cascade. And again, great book if you're looking for some case examples and things like that of polypharmacy patients. So again, that link and all the links to other content that I have as well, meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, so let's wrap up with drug interactions here. I'll be, I think, fairly brief here. First thing to think about is blood pressure lowering medications. So that can have an additive effect. I think that's pretty common sense. So any antihypertensive, that's kind of a no-brainer. A couple other meds that I think about as far as dropping blood pressure, medication like Sinemet for Parkinson's can drop blood pressure. SGLT2 inhibitors, probably most often used for diabetes, but you know, their indications are expanding to heart failure and things, but they can drop blood pressure some, kind of have an added diuresis type of effect a little bit. PDE5 inhibitors, so drugs for erectile dysfunction like sildenafil, they can drop your blood pressure. So those are just a few examples of meds that you might not think about having blood pressure lowering effects, but could have some additive impacts there. The renal issues you have to be aware of. I always think of the triad of a diuretic or loop diuretic, NSAID and an ACE or an ARB. Using those three together can really be taxing on the kidney. So definitely remember to look out for those. If you have to use an NSAID, limit dose, limit duration, if you can at all possible there, and that might help prevent renal issues down the road. And of course, we've got to monitor kidney function if we're starting changing some of these meds that can impact renal function. Aminoglycosides, I alluded to with ototoxicity, kind of that additive risk. And then, of course, the edema-causing agents that might oppose beneficial effects from a loop diuretic. We got to be a little bit careful with that because we don't want to contribute to the prescribing cascade and polypharmacy. So again, some of those meds, calcium channel blocker, pioglitazone, some of the neuropathic pain meds like pregabalin can all cause edema. So keep an eye on that. All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for today. If you found this helpful, definitely leave a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That's greatly appreciative to those of you who've done that. Go subscribe at reallifepharmacology.com. And if you have questions, comments, definitely don't hesitate to reach out to me on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS, or you can track me down at mededucation101@gmail.com. Well, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.